and welcome to Unjustly Maligned, the show for people who go against the grain. We seek to rehabilitate the overlooked, ignored, derided, or the just plain hated. Movies, novels, music, comic books, video games, whatever. If everyone hates it, we'll find someone who loves it and let them explain why you should too. I'm your host, Anthony Johnston, and my guest today is the podcaster Rachel Donner. Rachel, welcome to the show.
Hello.
I'm really looking forward to this one because this is going to be one of those ones where I just really want to hear your perspective about this and people will understand why when we get into it. So please tell us what you have come on the show to talk about. Give us some context about it. Tell us why it's maligned and why you think that that is wrong.
So we're going to talk today about perhaps the greatest entertainment program the world has ever seen. And that is the Eurovision Song Contest.
Of course.
Yes.
So most people listening to this are probably going to be in America. And most Americans have never seen Eurovision. And maybe their only experience of it will be, well, Brits like me or Europeans like me, I should say, tweeting it while it's on. And bafflement ensues.
I might disagree with that a little bit, but we can go into that.
No, go on, please do. Go on.
Well, my background with Eurovision goes way back to the 70s. I know that's crazy for an American.
Wow, yeah.
But in, I believe, 1978 and 1979, Israel won Eurovision both years in a row. And you're asking, I'm sure people who don't know anything about Eurovision are like, this sounds like a European thing. What's Israel got to do with it? That's a whole other.
Yeah, well, yeah.
ball of wax. But the short version is that the Eurovision Song Contest allows participants from anybody in the European Broadcasting Union. And Israel is a member of the European Broadcasting Union. So that's how they get to be in the competition. But the way the contest goes is that each country that wants to send a contestant has a contest within their own country to determine a song to represent them in the greater competition. And then they send that song. There's two semifinals to narrow down to the top 20. And then the top 20 perform in a final. And there's voting by texting, I believe, these days. And each country has their own internal text vote, and they award points based on the result of that text vote. So each country gets to award the same number of points. So all the countries are on the same level playing field, but you cannot vote for your own country. And then they award a winner, and that country of the winner gets to host the next year, which is super cool, I think.
Yeah. One of the crazy sort of very European things about it that I love actually is that there's no prize.
Nope.
Like there's no cash prize. There's no recording contract. It's a very post-war European thing. You know, there is nothing other than the prestige of winning that comes at the end of the show. Can you even imagine somebody suggesting a show like this, an equivalent show to these days, and not having some kind of prize at the end of it?
Yeah, I know. It's the winner gets to do a lot of work next year.
Right. Mm. Well, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Although there have been plenty of winners who've kind of vanished without trace. I mean, famously, yes. Some haven't, like ABBA, almost certainly the most famous example of that, who won in the 70s with Waterloo, I think it was, wasn't it?
Yes.
And of course, went on to become one of the biggest bands ever in the world.
Yeah, there have been plenty of contestants who didn't win who've been successful. But
also true, yeah. But there have also been many winners who just kind of disappeared without trace and you never heard from them again.
Yeah.
So, sorry, carry on. Why did that in particular get you into it? And why did that bring it to your attention?
So I'm Jewish. And in religious school, when I was a wee child, the winning song from 79 was actually played sometimes in my little Sunday school class.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was called Hallelujah, and it was a pretty simple little song, and it was done by this group called Milk and Honey, which Israel's referred to as the land of milk and honey, so it's very cheesy and awesome.
Hallelujah.
And yeah, so we sang that song a little bit, and it was on a tape I had, I believe, as well. So I listened to that song as a kid, and I also have some English relatives, so I was vaguely aware of Eurovision through them, and that's how I knew that Milk and Honey was part of this Eurovision contest.
I see. And so what, you just then followed it from afar?
I did. You know, obviously in the 80s and a good part of the 90s, it was hard to follow along because we didn't have the internet. They didn't start streaming Eurovision until, I think, 2000. So I just kind of followed it vaguely and saw like news articles because I read a lot of European news sources for various reasons, but I followed along through that a little bit. But then also coming back to Israel, I did a study abroad program there in 95, and an artist was putting out some albums then called Donna International.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, so I have two of her CDs. And then in 1998, she won with the amazing song Diva. So that kind of brought it back to the forefront of my attention at that point. And I started following it pretty closely from then until now.
I didn't realize that they started streaming so long ago. I mean, 2000, that's relatively early in the days of online streaming to have begun that.
Yeah, I remember downloading some very specific program in, I want to say 2006. Just to watch it. And I have me and one other friend of mine were IMing probably over AOL Instant Messenger or something ancient like that, talking about it as it was streaming. And that was Lordi won that year.
Oh, yes, yes. Hard Rock Hallelujah.
The true believers, thou shalt be saved. Brothers and sisters, you strong in the faith. On the day of reckoning, it's who dares wins. And you will see the Joker soon will be the new kings. All we need is lightning with power and might, striking down the prophets of fools. And as the moon is rising, give us the sign. Now let us rise up in rock and roll angels, we got hot rock, hallelujah. Demons and angels, soul in one have arrived. Rock and roll angels, we got hot rock, hallelujah. God's creation, supernatural high. High! Wings on my back, I got
hard rock, hallelujah, which is a pretty phenomenal song and stage presentation.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is also, I think, the key part of Eurovision is that it gets such vitriol over the cheesy stage presentation that happens with all these songs. And I think it's amazing. And especially in recent years, they've kind of, some of the contestants have used that to their advantage and said, okay, you think this is all stupid, cheesy crap with wind machines. No, we're going to do something special. And so even last year's winner, Sweden, they used the screen background as part of an interactive thing with the singer mm-hmm. in the song Heroes. And it was beautiful. And I defy anybody to trash that.
Well, and the year before, which was Conchita, I believe, wasn't it?
Yeah.
They had that stage with the moving coloured globes on poles that kind of, you know, they moved around and rearranged for each artist. It was a really minimalist but very effective stage to give everybody a background.
Yeah. And I will say, 2 years ago with Conchita, I think she was so galvanizing that that's what kind of brought America into it.
Oh, right.
I remember looking at my Twitter feed during Eurovision that year, and I had never seen anything like that before. And I'd been obviously watching it for years and never experienced anything like that with Americans.
Oh, you mean it was Americans tweeting about it?
Right. Okay. And it was the first time that I'd really seen such a large volume of Americans in my feed paying attention and having an interest in it.
Right, right. Because this is why I was really interested to talk to an American about it, because over here, it's just a staple of our culture, of British television, of our lives. It's, you know, a lot of people do just dismiss it. A lot of people ignore it, but everybody knows what it is. Everybody knows that it goes on. It's kind of a bit like Doctor Who, in that it's just part of our cultural landscape and has been for decades, and you just kind of grow up with it, and you either take an interest in it or you don't, but you can't be unaware of it. And then compare that, again, like Doctor Who, to America, where to most Americans, it's kind of new and exciting and a bit exotic. So, you know, you guys get into it probably deeper than we do, because to us, it's just, we kind of take it for granted.
Yeah, I could see that. And you could speak to this obviously better than I could, but I see it being maligned, especially in the UK, because of how it's presented with the snarky commentating.
Right.
It's not given sort of respect. It's sort of one of these things that we just, you know, almost Mystery Science Theater 3000 commentary.
Yeah, right.
To it as it's going on. And I think that's partially because it's good television, but also because, frankly, the UK doesn't have a shot in hell of winning this thing ever again.
Oh, no. And that's, you're absolutely right. That's exactly a big part of it, is that we know, you know, our entries are terrible and that we don't stand a chance of winning. And so, yeah, it's kind of, it's the sour grapes. Well, I don't want to win anyway because it's rubbish.
Exactly.
Which, of course, is not actually true. If we did win, you know, there would be street parties up and down the country. But as you say, right now, in the current way that we approach Eurovision, that's simply not going to happen, because we don't take it seriously. And our music industry doesn't take it seriously. It is kind of, well, yeah, maligned and seen as bubblegum, silly, cheesy entertainment. You know, oh, those wacky Europeans, which is exactly the attitude that Terry Wogan, very famous TV presenter and DJ over here, who died sadly last year, he presented it for years and years, and he cultivated this kind of dismissive, not just dismissive, but kind of almost baffled and weary personality to comment on it. It was almost like his attitude was like, what the hell am I doing here, and what is going on with all these crazy Europeans? Like, why is this happening to me? And it was clearly done tongue-in-cheek, but it was very funny, and it did lay the groundwork. Of course, since he retired, Graham Norton took over, who's kind of, you know, who is Wogan's successor in many ways outside of Eurovision. And if anything, Graham Norton's actually like amped that up, and he really rips into some of the acts now. Very, very snarky, you know, sarcastic comments about the act. But again, still pretty funny.
Yeah.
Do you get the Norton commentary on the feed that you get in America?
No, I could if I wanted to.
But you choose
but
not
that
to.
Wouldn't, well, no, because that's not the legal way for me to acquire a stream.
I see. Ah, right.
So I just watch the official Eurovision feed.
Right. You mentioned voting earlier, actually. And do you know, apparently from, I think, this year onwards, you can now also vote by app.
Oh.
Through the Eurovision app, yeah.
Well, that'll be good.
I have no idea how on earth they're going to track that geographically, but I guess they...
Especially since one can change their IP address and pretend they're somewhere else.
Right, exactly, exactly. But, so, I mean, yeah, for people who don't know the history of it, you mentioned the European Broadcasting Union, and that's the sort of organization that which was formed after the Second World War. And what a lot of people don't realize is that that organization does do a lot of things outside of Eurovision and always has. You know, they do a lot of pan-European sporting events and stuff. And when it started, technically, it was quite an innovation because there were no TV satellites and stuff. It was done microwave transmissions, apparently, to have a simultaneous broadcast across the whole of Europe, which was very, well, I think it was unheard of at the time. And it's kind of amazing that for the last 60 years, the same organization has, you know, continued doing this every single year.
Yeah, it's one of the longest running broadcasts in the world.
Mm. I think it has to be at 60 years, yeah. That's even older than Doctor Who, I think.
Yeah, I think the only thing that's run longer is maybe the Sunday Mormon Tabernacle Choir
right.
broadcast.
And talking about the cheese, I mean, the other thing, and I don't know whether, well, you probably know this, but maybe most people who follow along in the US wouldn't, is that Eurovision is huge among the GLBT community here in the UK, and I think in Europe generally, which I think goes some way towards the appeal of the sort of, you know, the slightly cheesy glamour, the, you know, I was going to say...
Well, it's a lot of club songs.
Right, exactly. And the music style has, in modern years, become very, very club-focused, yeah.
Yeah, because even the prototypical Eurovision power ballad, you just throw a beat under it and put it in a club and you're good.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that was kind of... Well, Celine Dion, another one who got, you know, had massive success off the back of a Eurovision when she represented Switzerland, I believe, when she won. Because this is another thing a lot of people don't realize, the songwriters and performers don't actually have to be from the countries that they represent. You know, you can bring in a ringer if you want. And Celine Dion's win was probably maybe the last one that was a real proper, as you say, Eurovision power ballad without a sort of club mix running underneath it.
I think one of the other fun things that's come about is contestants from the X Factors or The Voice or whatever, that version of it in each particular country, are getting to perform in Eurovision.
I think that's what the UK entry this year is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's two people who finished pretty low, I think, in The Voice that kind of paired up.
Which tells you all you need to know about how seriously we take Eurovision.
Yeah. It's not the worst song I've ever heard. It's actually, it would do okay on top 40 pop radio, I think, in the UK. You're free to let go, cause I'll be here for you. And when you fall, I'll be your parachute. Oh, I feel like I'm dancing in the sky. I come alive when I'm with you. I come alive when I'm with you. You're not alone, we're in this together. All that you want is ready forever. And they don't need to know. And they don't need to know. I feel like I'm dancing in the sky. Yeah, I listened to like 30 seconds of it in preparation for this show. I listened to all of the entries for this year just to sort of get a handle on what was being, what would be played. And yeah, it was fine, but there was absolutely nothing whatsoever about it that made it stand out. Yeah, I would definitely say that. But then Ireland a few years ago had Jedward 2 years in a row.
Really?
I don't know what they were thinking. 2 years in a row.
Wow, I didn't even realize that. I remember seeing them once. So I didn't realize they were there 2 years in a row. That's crazy.
Yeah. The first year they finished much higher. The second year, I think they were like second to last.
Everybody was like, bored now.
Yeah.
Mind you, Ireland don't want to win anymore anyway. Ireland
no, is... They had the most amazing, like, kiss-off entry in 2008 with that turkey puppet.
Oh, God,
with Caroline Duspoint. Oh, my God. That was incredible.
Yeah, because Ireland is, I believe, the most successful country in Eurovision. They've won more often than anybody else.
But it was like the 90s was the last.
Didn't they win like 4 years in a row?
Yeah, like 3 or 4 years in a row. Or maybe there was like 1 year and break in the middle, but they won four of them in 5 years, something like that.
Yeah, which is just nuts. And the thing is, hosting Eurovision is really expensive. It's a bit like the Olympics. It's like, in a way, nobody wants it because it's, you know, it can practically bankrupt the city where it's being held. So I think Ireland are just like, yeah, we don't want to win anymore. Just shove somebody like Jedward in there. That'll be fine.
Yeah, they'll be respectable enough to seem like we're trying, but not really. Although, but then you have entries like 2007, I think. So 2006, when Lordi won, was amazing because that whole presentation. But I think 2007 was a seminal year in the development of Eurovision because that was the year of Verka Sidutska with probably one of the most amazing, ridiculous entries I think that's ever.
Which one was that? Remind me.
That was the song Dancing, and it was a drag queen, and it was all like silver lamé outfits and just kind of speak singing. And it was in four different languages, kind of all mixed together. It was a little bit of German, a little bit of English, I think a little bit of Russian or Ukrainian. I don't know. But it was when people ask me about Eurovision, I say, watch this video.
What with the theory being, if they're into that, then they'll like the rest of it.
Yeah, I'd say like this is the ridiculousness of it, but that's why it's entertaining, because you never know what's going to happen.
Exactly. That's kind of what I was alluding to earlier with, you know, there's Americans being baffled by the Brits all tweeting this weird stuff, because this is the other thing. There are semifinals. There are now, because the number of countries taking part has ballooned over the last 20 years. So there are these, you know, multiple semifinals and stuff, and then you have the grand final. But I don't know about the rest of Europe, but certainly in the UK, most people who tune into Eurovision have not watched anything else. They haven't watched A Song for Europe, which is what we call the selection where we choose which song, you know, is our entry. They haven't watched the semifinals. All they've done is turned up, switched on the TV, and watched the final. So for a lot of them, this is the first time they're hearing any of these songs, seeing any of these acts. And that, I think, is what makes it... That's why people find it hilarious and enjoy it, because some of them are truly outrageous, truly ridiculous. And it's the first time you've ever seen them. And you see them for like 3 minutes and then they're done. And you're just left reeling going, what on earth was that?
Yeah. It's also interesting because part of the rules of the competition is that they have to sing live, obviously.
Yes.
And so you can really tell some of them who aren't good live singers. And that if you go back and watch their entry video, it's amazing. Because it's pre-recorded or like a music video. And then you see them perform live, especially in the semifinals. You're just like, ooh. Yeah.
Yeah, there was, although sometimes it's the UK entry from a few years ago, I don't recall the name of the entry or the song, but it was a duet and they got a terrible ranking because their performance was really bad. They were slightly out of key and a little flat, and it just sounded really bad. But they maintained afterwards that they couldn't hear anything, that the monitors were terrible and they were like effectively singing blind, which is, you know, one of the unfortunate side effects of, well, yeah, when you're singing live, these sort of things can happen.
Oh, we probably should mention that there are certain countries that are grandfathered into the final, no matter how they would do in the semifinal.
Right, yes. And the UK is one of them.
Yes. And so it's really the countries that put in the bulk of the money for the European Broadcasting Union.
Right.
Like France, Germany, Italy, Spain, and the UK. And then the host country gets an automatic.
Of course, yeah.
Into the final.
It's, the whole, the rules around Eurovision have changed so much over the years. I mean, if you started watching the 70s, you may remember that countries were at one point, they had to sing in one of the official languages of their own country.
Yeah.
Which resulted in, you know, to somebody who doesn't speak all those languages, you know, some completely unintelligible stuff. And then they relaxed the rules and said, oh no, actually you can sing in any language you like. And then they restricted it again, I think in the 80s. And then finally, for the last like 15 years or so, they've been, no, it's okay, you can sing in any language you like. And so, you know, you've had songs in even African languages.
Yeah. Most people default to English, or at least do the chorus of their song in English because it's a club song or something.
Yeah, there's a really weird...
Except for France, they'll always sing in French.
Well, you say that, but this year's entry for France does
that. I guess
that.
It's mixed.
Yeah, it does exactly, it is mixed. That. Jumps back and forth.
Yeah. That's a great song, by the way.
Do you think?
J'ai cherché. Yeah, I think it's a really great song.
J'ai cherché un sens à mon existence, j'y ai laissé mon innocence, j'ai fini le cœur sans défense, j'ai cherché l'amour et la reconnaissance, j'ai payé le prix du silence, je me blesse et je recommence. Tu m'as comme donné l'envie d'être moi, donné un sens à mes pourquoi, tu as tué la peur qui dans mes
I listened to it and I was like, it's not bad in any way, but
yeah,
nothing stood out to me about it, I must admit. Although, you know, some of the songs that are clearly going to make it through to the final, you know, there's a real big gulf in quality in some of the songs this year. You listen to something, you're just like, oh, wow. You know, and compared to those, the French one sounds like a work of genius. But there is so much singing in English as well. That's the other thing that I kind of feel like the rest of Europe must get really annoyed about that. There are so many songs sung in English because it seems to be kind of the default language of pop music.
Yeah. Although I will say in that same year, 2007, with Verka Sidushka, that actually was the runner-up in the contest. And the winner was from Serbia. And she sang in Serbian. And it was a gorgeous song. Because I'm crazy and I love Eurovision, I actually know all the words to it in Serbian.
Wow.
But or I did for a while. I don't know if I could do it right now, but I did for a little while there. But yeah, it was a gorgeous song. And it was in Serbian. Like, nobody knew, unless you spoke that language, what she was saying, really.
Nobody outside of Serbia.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's one of the things I do. The weird stuff. I mean, maybe that wasn't, you know, too weird, but the weird stuff that you get sometimes in amongst the regular sort of Euro pop cheese is one of the reasons why I still keep watching it, because you do occasionally get little gems. And occasionally countries will put something that, well, like Lordi being a perfect example, something that is just so strange, so unlike Eurovision in there. And you're just like, wow.
Or you get something that's could be a bona fide, you know, radio pop hit. Like, I think in 2010, when Lena won with Satellite from Germany, that's a great pop song.
I went everywhere for you. I even did my hair for you. I bought new underwear light blue when I wore them just the other day. Love you, know I'd fight for you. I left down the porch light for you. Whether you are sweet or cool, I'm gonna love you either way. Love, I love.
Yes, yes. Well, and there were a couple last year as well. There were two standout tracks for me last year from Latvia. A singer called Aminata had a song called Love Injected.
Your eyes are a mirror. Look under the cover. Love is above all I'm saying. Into your hands. Let's move away.
Yeah, that's a, that was a really good song.
Yeah, it was great. And the Belgian track, which was a really young male singer, Loic Nuttet, probably mispronounced that, but with a song called Rhythm Inside.
Be you enemy or lover, we are put here to discover the heart that beats within each other. We're gonna rap, pop, pop. Rap up, up, we're gonna rap up, up tonight. And if we die tomorrow, what do we have to show for the wicked ways down below? The rhythm inside is telling us we can fly tomorrow on the beautiful wind that blows on a cosmic chart. Love aside, I'm gonna get that rhythm back.
And the reason I loved both of those particularly, and he actually did quite well in the voting as well, but the reason I loved both of those was because they actually sounded like they were made in 2015. They actually sounded like modern pop songs that, as you say, you'd expect to hear on the chart, because that is a bit of an issue with Eurovision. You know, a lot of countries are kind of old-fashioned in their choices.
And you can sort of tell, especially with the ones that women sing, you can tell by their dresses what year they're stuck in, I think.
Very true. I think part of the problem is that a lot of countries rely very heavily on traditional established songwriters to pen their songs. And so that naturally, unless they are young, you know, modern sounding songwriters, they're inevitably going to end up with stuff that sounds a little out of date.
Yeah. Although I will say, so in this year's competition, the host, Sweden, the song by Franz, If I Were Sorry, that's a really good radio song, I think.
I hold my breath till my face turn blue. I rob a bank in a post office to swim across the ocean. If I were sorry, I'd take a vow of silence.
I wouldn't say a single word until you really heard. If I were sorry, I'd run 1,000 miles. Wouldn't stop until I dropped. Wouldn't take the break to breathe until I got close enough. If I were sorry,
very modern sounding, yeah.
Very modern sounding.
Yeah. Also, I like that one. It gets points from me for correct use of were rather than was in the title. Okay, so before we, I mean, we will talk a little about the songs for this year's entry, I think. But tell me more about what is it that you said that you love cheesy pop music, and obviously Eurovision is a haven of cheesy pop music. But, you know, you can hear cheesy pop music anywhere. So what is it that keeps you watching Eurovision and that makes you tune in every year?
I love that it's a competition, but it's something that seems to bring Europe together in a way. And, you know, a good portion of the whole continent is watching something all at the same time and caring about the outcome and rooting for their own country to either massively succeed or go down in flames in a hate-watching sort of way. And I love the politics of it, which is extraordinary, and the voting blocks and seeing who gives their votes to which country and if they choose their geographic neighbors. So does all of Scandinavia stay together? Do all of the Baltics stay together and vote for each other? I find that so fascinating.
Yeah, does Cyprus always give Greece 12 points?
Yes.
And vice versa, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And you just kind of roll your eyes like, really, guys? Come on.
I mean, it happens every year.
Yeah. But that whole phenomenon is pretty extraordinary.
Is that something that you were kind of aware of anyway, or did you realize that just from watching it over the years?
I've realized that from watching it over the years. Yeah.
Because that is something that it's notorious over here. You know, it's something that the Brits especially will always complain about because we don't have anybody like that. We don't have any allies. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Nobody ever reliably votes for the English, you know. You know, even our closest neighbors, France and Germany, well, we've been at war with both of them multiple times over the last few hundred years. You know, that's not going
to
happen.
I think you'd probably have to have an entry that's like in another language.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Can you, that might
do it. Like, suck up.
That would never fly over here.
My, I know. God.
Oh, I can't even imagine trying to get, you know, a song sung in French by a Brit through a song for Europe. That's just,
yeah.
Oh man. But it is, I mean, one of the things I love about it is that you're right. It does bring people together, and the advent of social media and Twitter especially has really brought that out in modern times. You know, everybody just sits there live tweeting the show back and forth to their friends.
It's true.
All right, let's talk about this. So who's your favorite for this year?
You know, I really like that France song.
Do you think that actually stands a chance of winning?
Well, according to what the current odds are, Russia is going to win, hands down. I think the Russian song is a great song, and they've kind of been a bit of a bridesmaid over the past few years. Russia has been the runner-up twice in the last 4 years.
Right. Well, and they've been booed for a couple of years running as well because of all the stuff going on in Eastern Europe.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think this is like, oh, there's nothing horribly tragic going on with Russia right now. So maybe we'll give them this one. And the song is really good.
I thought it was a bit bland. I mean, it's not, again, not bad in any way, but...
No, but you also have to evaluate it on a Eurovision scale, not on a music scale.
I guess that's true, yes. I was more of a fan of the front runners. I preferred Australia, actually.
Grown tired and weary, brown eyes. Trying to feel your love through FaceTime. Symphonies of dreams and highlights caught up in this crazy fast life. Baby, you're not here with me, and I keep calling, calling, keep calling, calling. Now my heart awakes to the sound of silence, and it beats to the sound of silence, and it beats to the sound of silence. Now my
Oh, yeah. That is a really good song, actually.
Yeah. I mean, who knows whether it will win, but personally, I thought that was sort of the best of the front runners. Yeah. Which that's something else that we should actually quickly talk about.
Oh, yeah.
About.
Australia. Nowhere near Europe.
Yeah. the European thing is rapidly becoming less and less tenable.
Yeah. I think, though, I waver back and forth, like, would or should America participate in this if given the opportunity? And I think the answer is no.
Why is that?
But, well, I feel it's kind of like Robbie Williams' career in that he made it everywhere else in the world but America because we're just a special kind of place that likes a certain kind of pop song. That for some reason, some artists break through here and some don't. And I feel like Eurovision is that thing that won't. But yeah, One Direction is like huge here. So, but Robbie Williams never made it really. So I feel like Eurovision is like Robbie Williams in that sense. But I think a Eurovision style thing, because that's what we do best, is we take European concepts and we make our own version.
Right.
I think if we did it here and had it with the 50 states, that would be amazing.
Oh, wow.
Extraordinary. And you could do it in the same structure because we have 50 states. You do 225 state semifinals and then you get your top 20 and let's go.
I foresee civil war.
I know, but it would be the same thing. Will the southern states vote together in a block? Will New England vote together in a block? Who knows? Like... the possibilities are endless.
They really are. Yeah, that's...
Yeah.
I mean, in a way, you already have... Because obviously, you know, we've all now got the talent shows and things like The Voice. And, you know, you've got America's Got Talent. We've got Britain's Got Talent. And did you have X Factor over there? Was that a thing?
We did for a couple of years, but it didn't really stick.
Right, right. But yeah, you know, we already have all of those things. But yeah, dividing it up by state, like Eurovision is divided up by country. Oof. I don't foresee that going well. Oh, man. It'd certainly be interesting, though, yeah.
It would. But that's what I see, like, America taking that concept and saying, no, we're not going to join your party. We're better than that.
We're going to make our own party, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and to explain to people, Australia was invited last year, because last year was the 60th anniversary celebration event. And so Australia was invited as supposedly a one-off. Just to help celebrate the 60th, mainly because, you know, no, they're not a European country, but they speak English, they're part of the British Commonwealth. I'm kind of surprised Canada wasn't invited as well, to be honest. And then, I don't know, and then they just sort of decided to keep them in. So it looks like they're now permanently going to be part of Eurovision for some
as long as they want to, I guess.
For some weird reason. I mean, Israel, again, like, not part of Europe. You know, Azerbaijan is kind of pushing it.
Some
of the countries, you look at them and you're like, really? Really? In the Eurovision? But this is the great thing about Eurovision is, ultimately, you don't care. You know, all that really matters is it a decent song or is it a funny song at least? Are you having a good time? And, you know, I don't think anybody really takes the European aspect of it all that seriously. Certainly not here in Europe anyway.
No. I think that is one part of it that's hard to explain to Americans.
Yeah, really doesn't make much sense. There's very little rhyme or reason to most of Eurovision, I think. So you sent me a list of what you considered the front runners for this year. And Sweden, you already mentioned, were in there. And Russia, yeah. Who else was on there? There was, Australia, which I like.
Yeah, Australia, France. France is actually second on the list in terms of the betting lines.
Oh, right.
But yeah, so it's Russia, France, Sweden, and Australia. And then rounding out the top five is Bulgaria.
Bulgaria?
Yes.
You and I, we collide like the stars on a summer night. We can shine forever.
That one was kind of the weakest of the top five. I think it was just kind of a run-of-the-mill song.
This is the one with the wonderful line. This is another thing I love about Eurovision, is because everybody sings in English, but not everybody, you know, has English as a first language, obviously. And so you get some wonderful lyrics that you would only ever get from a non-native speaker. And this is the one where, with the line, "If love was a crime, we would be criminals."
Oh, yeah.
Which is just so wonderfully kind of pop naive. I love it.
Yeah. Well, Americans do buy t-shirts with French on it that has some nonsensical phrase on it. So just because it's in French. So it's the same idea.
Right. It's like people who get dodgy Chinese and Japanese tattoos.
Yes.
Without really understanding what it says.
Yep.
Oh, San Marino from this year was another one that you pointed me to, because it's bonkers.
Yes.
I want to stay with you tonight, far from every sight and every fear. I got to be inside your mind and hide into your arms. I need you more and more each day. I've got to say I am addicted. Together through the skies, your eyes never told me lies. I didn't know that I'm falling for you, and my dreams could come true. I didn't know that you're warm like the sun, our life has just begun. I didn't know.
Absolutely nuts.
Yeah, that is the entry this year that, if you want to know what sort of the heyday of Eurovision in terms of doing something crazy, that's it.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of, are you familiar with a a British band called Right Said Fred.
Oh yes,
that was what it reminded me of. It was that. It was that level. It was, it was that level of just, you know, bizarre pop cheese.
Yeah.
Oh, and Greece is pretty nuts as well this year, because it starts off with folk music, but then this guy starts in with a weird, quite bad rap.
Yes. Do you know, I think Greece has a little bit of a history of trying to rap in their songs.
Oh, really?
Yes. If I'm remembering correctly.
I'm sure you are. I don't.
But it's like a little bit of a sort of Greek ethnic dancey thing, and then they do a little rap breakdown and then go back into the Greek dancey.
Right. Is that a bit of a pattern?
That's kind of their MO, I think.
I must admit, a lot of this goes in one ear and out the other for me. I only remember the ones that I either like, that win, or that are really, really bizarre.
Like, yeah.
The one last year with the was it the Polish one with the milkmaids?
Yes.
Just like, what on earth?
It's, my goodness.
Was anybody even paying attention to the song?
No. No. But this is what's so great about it. I just keep coming back to this, is that you just kind of, you don't even really hate watch it. You just kind of watch it with like your jaw on the floor.
Right.
You know, like bemusement and wonder, I think.
Yeah.
That's part of the appeal of it for me anyway.
No, I think it is for most people who watch it. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you can have a good time, you know, and a bit of fun and everything, but also, yeah, just seeing, you know, everybody loves sort of seeing crazy things that foreign people are doing. You know, that's human nature. And Eurovision is absolutely full of that.
Yes.
What was the one? Oh, Belgium, I quite liked for this year. I don't think it'll win, but I quite like it because it's an almost perfect rendition of a 1970s disco track.
Hit it! Don't ask me why the sun is shining. Long after the day is done, the evening falls, the bright lights bring out the best in me. I see massive walls weighing down the people all around, but they don't seem to mind at all. And I will try to stand my ground, won't be bound, and bring out the best.
If you put that on the stereo and told me that it was a disco track from the 70s, I would believe you instantly.
Yeah, that's a fun one as well. I do like Israel's entry this year. I mean, it's definitely not a winner, but it's a pretty solid entry. It's called Made of Stars.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah, I remember listening to that one and going, yeah, it's fine. It's not going to win, but it's fine. It's not embarrassing, at least.
Yeah.
Which has been an issue for some countries in the past, including the UK. God knows we've put, you know, a fair few embarrassing songs up there before now. Oh, and the other one I wanted to point out from this year was Montenegro, because it's 2016, and finally, dubstep effects have made their way into Eurovision.
Oh no.
It's like, welcome to 2010. It's on the rockish side of, you know, sort of music for Eurovision. Not like Lordi. That's it. That's another thing. I honestly expected the year after Lordi to be awash with, you know, sort of heavy
like
rock
death
style
metal.
Bands. Well, maybe not death metal, but, you know, with heavy rock style bands at least. And it wasn't. Everybody went completely the opposite way and did really cheesy pop stuff.
Yeah.
It's kind of surprising to me.
Yeah, it's this weird guessing game of, I'm sure, with the individual countries of what they think is the kind of song that's going to win it this year.
Right, there's so much calculation goes into it.
Yeah. I don't know. But thinking about all that and the little machinations that go into selecting the song from each country and how each country does it and all of that, I mean, that's also part of the fun, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And also, as you said it earlier, the anticipation of the voting blocks and just waiting to see if, you know, how people vote politically. Although, of course, in recent years, there is a little less of that because now they split the country votes 50-50 between a judging panel and these texts and app votes and what have you from the public. So that's going to make for some interesting, especially with the app this year.
Yes.
It's going to be very interesting. Okay, for people who don't know, the website is at Eurovision.tv, and you can see all of the entries there if you want to sort of prepare yourself. So how do you prepare for the final? I mean, do you arrange a viewing party?
No, I tend to just actually watch streaming by myself, but with Twitter
right
as my company. I think you get more of the enjoyment out of it that way.
And do you watch the semis as well?
I try to. It's the semis are during the work week, and obviously with the time difference.
Yeah.
It's in the middle of my work day. So, but the good thing about the Eurovision website is that they post it, so you can watch it afterwards.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's good to know. Yeah.
So there's been times where I've watched it when the semis when I've gotten home from work that day.
And that is at the same site, Eurovision.tv.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Fantastic stuff.
They post the full video. The other thing I think is cool about the television broadcast of it, if you don't watch it via BBC or something, if you just watch the official stream, the kind of in-between stuff between the acts when they're setting up is really cool sometimes. There's cool like little animations or live action little trailers for each country.
Oh, right, the introductions
do.
For each. Yeah.
And I know it's really just a time killer between songs so they can set up, but it's quite good.
Yeah, no, it is. Well, and also they sometimes have actual acts for intervals in the studio as well. Riverdance, famously, the first public performance of Riverdance was during one of those intervals at Eurovision. And of course, it's such an enormous stage to debut something like that out, of course, you know, went on to become one of the most successful shows in the world.
Yeah.
So yes, that's definitely worth, rather than, you know, just running to the bathroom or making a coffee or whatever, you know, it is definitely worth watching some of those because you occasionally get these little gems.
Yeah. The other part is the actual announcing of the votes, which we haven't really talked about.
Oh, yes. 12 points.
12 points. In after the songs are finished and there's an hour of voting, so that's when they vamp a lot and do some of these performances, and that part is that's okay sometimes. It's mostly just the hosts kind of chatting up and interviewing the winner from last year and how sad are they to have their reign over, kind of like a beauty pageant. And but when they get to the actual voting, I think that part of it is also brilliant because they go to the capital city or some studio in each country and kind of throw it there to announce who got the top three country votes. who they're going to award their 12 points to, which is 12 points for anybody who may not have been following that along the way. The top vote getter from a country gets 12 points. So, but that tossing it to those broadcasters where they have their 15 seconds to shine in front of all of Europe, they milk that.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my goodness. It's so fun to watch them try to extend how long it takes to say who got their 12 points.
Right, to say, hello, Stockholm or wherever. Yes. This is Moldovia.
This from the beautiful city.
Yeah.
Yeah. We are so happy and thank you so much. And we are thrilled to be here.
Well, and you even get ones, you occasionally get them doing like, you know, little 10-second comedy skits and stuff. And
yeah.
Like, just stop, stop.
Just tell us who got the points. We don't care.
Yeah. Because they quite often use, you know, actors, celebrities, whatever, from those countries to read out the points. Which, of course,
like, we don't know who you are.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter.
It's completely lost on anybody not in that country. But as you say, they're so desperate for their 15 seconds of fame. Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Then, yes, it's all totted up. And it's one of those competitions where it can sometimes be obvious very quickly who's going to win. But there are so many countries voting. And because even countries that don't make it to the final still get to vote. You know, countries that have taken part in the whole process, I believe they still get to vote, even though they're not actually taking part in performing in the final. So you do get some sour grape voting going on there as well. And there are so many points to be handed out that it can sometimes be quite a close thing. And it comes down to the last few countries to give their points.
Yeah, sometimes it does.
Before you realize who wins. Yeah.
Yeah. I know with, Donna International came down, I think, to the second to last country.
Yeah, which is always, you know, I mean, obviously that makes for more entertainment because it's much more tense.
Yeah.
But then you do also get the years like, Lordi. It was very...
That was just a runaway.
Right, that was a landslide. It was amazing. Conchita a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
I think it was... You know, people were all not sure. But then by about halfway through the voting, it was like, well, unless Conchita now gets no votes from anybody for the rest of the voting, she's
won.
So, yeah, you kind of, who knows what it'll be like this year.
Yep.
But it will be fun and we will be watching.
That's for sure.
So, as I say, people can go to the website Eurovision.tv to, you know, if they want to prepare themselves and go and watch lots and lots of European cheesy pop.
And I believe there's a Spotify playlist with all available songs as well.
Excellent.
If you just search for it.
I will see if I can get a link to that and put it in the show notes as well. And I'll link to the website in the show notes. And then, yeah, we will be, as I say, watching ourselves as well with, you know, a drink in our hands.
Yes.
And a spirit of great fun. Which is really what Eurovision is. It really is just, you know, it's just fun. You can't take it seriously. You can overanalyze it, but that takes some of the fun out of it. You know, you really have just got to sit back and let yourself be entertained and amused by the acts, I think. All right. So, Rachel, thank you very much for coming on and helping us try and convince people to watch Eurovision, which is on, incidentally, everybody. As this episode goes live, it is on in less than a week's time. This year's is the 14th of May. Saturday the 14th of May is the final. Hello everyone, Anthony here. I don't normally do these kind of interruptions, but it was only after Rachel and I finished recording this show that Eurovision announced they will have an actual broadcast partner this year for the USA with Logo, Viacom network, showing the competition live. Of course, you can still stream the broadcast from the Eurovision website if you prefer, but here's hoping that this is just the start of increased coverage for Eurovision in the States. That would be awesome. I will put a link to the BBC story announcing the US broadcast in the show notes for this episode. So you really should all tune in if you can.
Yes, watch it. Be amazed. Love it.
Be very amazed. Rachel, where can people find you if they like what you have to say?
I'm on Twitter at rmiriam, R-M-I-R-I-A-M. And I'm also the co-host of the Hockey Feels podcast. And you can find us on iTunes.
Any other podcasts?
I'm a participant in the Pod for Ham podcast through the Incomparable Network as well.
Ah, of course, yes. One of our sister shows.
Yes.
So, yes, if you want to hear more of Rachel talking about fun music, you should definitely go and listen to that. Thanks for listening to Unjustly Maligned, and please remember to check out my comics, books, and music. Go to anthonyjohnston.com for information and links to all of my work. You can support the show by rating Unjustly Maligned on iTunes, and if you really like it, please leave a review. It's the best way to spread the word to new listeners. Unjustly Maligned is a 7RQ production for The Incomparable and is made in England. You can find more information, links, and show notes at ump.fm. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Still, I mean, you explained why, but I still find it amazing that that, you know, you probably know more about Eurovision than me in terms of the rules and you know, the countries taking part and stuff. Because, like I say, it's just we just kind of grow up with it here, and so we take it for granted.
Yeah, there was actually, I didn't even mention it, but there was like another Israeli entry from '83 that was huge at Sunday school.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was Ofer Chaza. She's actually a pretty well-known singer.
Oh,
outside
yeah,
of,
yeah. Well, she's yeah. She passed
and
away,
she's passed
she?
Away, yeah.
Yeah.
So.
I know her because she guested with the Sisters of Mercy on a re-recording of their famed 12-inch song, Temple of Love.
Oh.
They did a version called Touched by the Hand of Ofer Chaza in 1992, I believe it was. I think that's the issue that a lot of people have with it, is that they see it as throwaway and bubblegum, you know, silly pop that isn't worth being taken seriously. But of course, that just assumes that pop music itself isn't to be taken seriously.
Yeah, which I think is also something that happens, that people who are like music snobs kind of don't like pop music for a lot of reasons.
No, absolutely.
And it's not fair because pop music is just as relevant as any other kind of music.
It's also hard to do. You know, this is the thing that a lot of music snobs, I think, don't account for, is that, you know, good pop music is really hard to make.
Yeah.
Which is why I think when it is really good, when you get a band like ABBA or something, they're such a huge hit because, you know, if pop music was easy, we'd have 100 ABBAs.
It's true. And I think the other part of it is, honestly, that if it's something that appeals to teen girls, it tends to get dismissed.
Oh, God, and there was that, I just found it on Wikipedia. There was that other one in 2009, the Georgian entry that got banned.
Oh, yeah.
They came up with a song called We Don't Wanna Put In.
Mm-hmm.
They were like, no, you can't do that.
You can't do that. That would have been so great, though.
Well, yeah, but they do have, to their credit, they have fairly strict rules that they do stick to about, you know, sort of political content. Which does mean, you know, that's another thing that lends them to being a little bit bland sometimes. But you can kind of understand why. You don't want war to break out over an event that is supposed to bring Europe together.